You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the podcast, Bubba Carpenter in studio, we'll talk about the Razorbacks' midweek sweep of Little Rock, and we'll look ahead to this weekend series against Florida. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Arkansas 36-7 after beating Little Rock last night 4-0. Razorbacks shut out the Trojans back-to-back games by scores of 10-0 in 7 innings, and then 4-0 last night. So 14-0 over the course of 16 innings this week. You know, when you have a shutout and maybe only two or three people contribute to it, I feel like that's different than whenever you have a shutout like last night and you throw six different pitchers. I mean, everybody has to be on, and it seemed like that was the case.
Yeah, I was impressed last night. I thought Colin Fisher, that's the best he's looked in a long time. Yeah. And I've said it all along, I'm a Steele Eaves fan, a sinker-slider guy. He's got two pitches. His velo's up to, he hit 93 last night. His last outing, he hit 94, so it's creeping up there. Not that that's everything, but he's throwing 94 with some sink, and then he's got that slider to go with it. I still think he needs a third pitch, but that's just me. To help get hitters off the sinker slider. If you're a two-pitch guy, you got a 50-50 chance of getting it right. Mm-hmm. And Cole Gibler was incredible last night. I mean, he gave it one hit. Rhodes got a base hit on him. I don't remember what the count was, but he's I think Rhodes is their best hitter. I mean, he squared up some balls, but struck out six in two innings. I mean, Gibler looked really good. And it wasn't just his slider last night. I mean, he struck some guys out with his fastball, too. Was locating his fastball, threw a couple at the top of the zone. Bybee was good. Fouch looked good. And then McIntyre came in. And I was really happy for McIntyre because I know he reached a couple of milestones last night. So that was really cool.
Yeah, so Will McIntyre, I believe it was his 225th and 226th strikeouts. Maybe it was 224 and 225. Either way, he passed Isaiah Campbell for 10th on the career strikeout list at Arkansas, and he ended up tying Gerald Hannes. So that's – I feel like, you know, the names that are in the top 10 of that strikeout list, like, you start tying any of those guys, you've done something pretty cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's gaining on a few other guys. Kevin Copps is one of them. He's not too far away. I want to say he's 6 or 8 away from Kevin Copps. So, yeah, he's gaining that list. And here's what's crazy, and I think about it all the time. I still tell some of my younger players because, you know what, today, you know, everyone wants to play. If they don't play, they get a poo-poo lip, you know, and they complain. And now kids want to transfer, and they want to switch. Even on the youth side, if their kid's not playing, parents are, oh, we're going to go play somewhere else. You know, I think of McIntyre in 2022, not pitching, last guy to get on the field, and he goes to Dave and says, Dave, or coach, give me a chance. You know, give me a chance, and I'll get outs for you. And then he went out and started dealing. I think it's awesome.
How do you think it would have gone for him if he would have said Dave?
Yeah, probably not as well.
I remember there was a post-game news conference. This has probably been, like, I don't know, years run together, 11, 12, 13 years ago. I think it was Chris Oliver. Remember him? And he said something about, and this was back in those days, they would have Van Horn in the middle, and then they would have a player on each side, and they would answer questions at the same time. The way they do it now is that Dave will come in, and he'll answer questions, and then the players will come in.
Right.
So it's done differently now. But then Oliver, I believe it was him, he said something like, yeah, well, you know, Van Horn told me, and Dave interjects, he goes, that's Coach Van Horn. And face gets real red, and on McIntyre, his strikeouts, you know, I know there are a lot of people who say, well, he's been here for 6 years, but let's break this down for a second. 2021, he didn't pitch, so now you're down to 5 years.
Yeah.
2020, I think he threw two times before the season got shut down.
Yeah, I think he had like 8 innings, something like that.
And then 2022, like you just said, he didn't get a chance really to pitch until about 7 weeks left in the season. So, you know, I think you got to look, you kind of, when you step back at, and look at it from that perspective, and for a guy who does not have a real high velocity pitch, this is impressive, I think, what he's done.
Yeah, it really is. And to see him, I think that cutter has made a big difference. And now, you know, guys know Will McIntyre, okay, we're going to see the cutter. Now he's doing a really good job of spotting that fastball. He can throw that fastball in. I like it when he uses the top of the zone. I think if a guy's sitting on a cutter, you throw him a fastball top of the zone, it's called a gray area. He's just going to panic swing at it. And so it's really good. But, hey, one quick thing on the name thing. Like I saw Norm DeBrine last night, and I still call him Coach D. I don't. It's hard for me to call him Norm. When I got into pro ball, I would call my coaches Coach. Like Trey Hillman was my manager 1 year, and I would call him Coach, and he'd go, oh, what's up, Coach? What's up, player? They don't want to be called Coach. They want to be called by their name, and so that was so hard for me to adjust to when I got into pro ball, because for me, it's a sign of respect. You know, you're the coach.
I'm the same way. I saw one of my old professors yesterday, and I cannot call him Larry. It's Professor.
Yeah.
So that's just how it is. I'm sure I'd be that same way with my high school teachers or something. On McIntyre, it's 225 strikeouts that he has now. He is 4 away from Charlie Boyce, and he is 7 away from Kevin Copps. I would think he's probably got a pretty good chance of catching one, if not both of those this year.
Yeah, I think so. And that's two pretty good names. I know Charlie Boyce, when he pitched here, I mean, he was a workhorse for the team, had some huge innings late in the year, and we all know about Kevin Copps. And so, yeah, there's some big names. He's creeping up on there. It's good to see, too, because – when you think of Razorback baseball, I like all the guys. I mean, don't get me wrong, but a guy like that just bleeds Razorback red. Mm-hmm. You know, he reminds me of like a position player guy like a Carson Shaddy would do anything in the world for the Razorbacks. And that's why, you know, the whole thing in 2018, I still get mad. And sometimes I just want to grab somebody and just, that wasn't Carson's. That wasn't his ball. Okay, so let it go. It's not his job to go catch that ball out there. That's somebody else's job. That's a right fielder's job. So, it's good to see guys like Will McIntyre that are Arkansas homegrown guys have success like that.
Pitching against Little Rock, and going back to Tuesday's game too, I thought it was really good. There weren't, you know, sometimes you can have a shutout or a low-scoring game, and you're doing it because you're pitching out of jams, runners all over the bases. Little Rock didn't have a whole lot of base runners. I think they had 8 hits during the entire series and maybe 3 or 4 walks. And it felt like the times that they got base runners outside of the top of the first inning against Tate McGuire, it was a lot of 2-out base runners. And it felt like Arkansas's pitching was really in control the whole midweek.
Yeah, I think the only runner that got to third in the 2-game series was the first inning, Tate McGuire's first inning. Other than that, I don't think they had a runner at third base the rest of the inning. So that's pretty impressive. And look, I mean, we're not facing a bunch of chumps. I mean, Chris Curry has got a really good team, and there's some guys in the lineup that can swing it. So that's, you know, hats off to the pitching staff.
They're playing better in their conference. You know, last year they were the favorite. They were the regular season champion, and SEMO ended up coming out of that conference tournament and coming here, and we all know how that went down. I don't know that I'm going to say that I think Little Rock will win its conference tournament, because that's just flip a coin, you know, the way that those automatic bids are given out. But if they did, we'll probably see them back here in June.
Yeah, it could happen. And I'll tell you, they threw a few guys at us that had pretty good stuff. And
well, they got a good Friday guy, Jackson Wells. We've seen him in the past, and it seems like he's really evolved into a pretty good starter for them.
Yeah, he's good. He pitched for me actually coming up through showcase ball. Yeah, good kid, hard worker, tough kid. I mean, just gritty out there on the mound. And so he pitched like that when he was 16, and he still pitches that way. Now he's got a lot better stuff, though. And so he's definitely a good Friday night guy, a guy that you wouldn't want to face in a situation like that.
Cole Gibler, let's talk about him a little bit more, because it didn't go well for him against Texas A&M. And we haven't seen a whole lot of instances where it hasn't gone well for him. It's, you know, at least in the last month or so, whether it be down in Little Rock against Grambling State, some of the other relief appearances. It just feels like when he comes in, he has a really nice outing. There seems to be a lot of carry on that fastball low in the zone. You mentioned that he threw some up in the zone too yesterday. Yeah. What do you think it is about his pitches that make him hard to hit?
I think that he does a great job of tunneling the slider off the fastball, and guys just don't see it. It's crazy, Matt. You'll see him throw a fastball, and he'll come back with a slider that bounces in front of the plate, and guys swing at it. And when that happens, you know they're not picking up the ball well. He sort of reminds me, and it's probably not a real good comparison, sort of reminds me a little bit of Matt Cronin watching him pitch. Now, Matt had more of a high carry fastball, top of the zone, 12-6 breaking ball. Mm-hmm. Gibbler's got more – I mean, he's still got some carry on his fastball, but his breaking ball is more of a slider. So a different mix, but a lot of similarities, I think, when they're on the mound. And so I'm excited about him. I tell you what, he's going to be a good one for us down the road. I think he's probably eventually going to be a good starter for us.
The swing and miss, and you talk about not being a good comparison, it reminds me of what we saw from Hagen last year. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's a different kind of pitcher. He's not as big as Hagen was, doesn't throw as hard. But guys just – they can't catch up with what he's throwing a lot of times.
Yeah, and I had Phil pull it up last night during the broadcast because I want to say Cole's striking out like – it's like a 19, you know, per nine, something like that. It's like a crazy number. And I had Phil look up Hagen Smith, and Hagen was 17 something per nine strikeouts per inning. And so that's pretty pretty good company you're in right there. But you know, it's different when you're coming in as a reliever. You're not the Friday night guy like Hagen was last year, but still that's a really good number for a freshman. And I know he's just going to keep getting better, you know, working with Hobbs and Zach and DJ and those guys. He's going to keep improving. I see him as being, I would think, a starter somewhere down the road. And boy, that's a really good two pitch mix. Plus, he's got a changeup that he throws, you know, 87, 88 miles an hour. It's got some movement on it. So he's got three good pitches.
His strikeouts per nine right now, 20.3.
Wow.
I mean, so that's a lot more than Hagen.
Yeah.
I think Hagen set the NCAA Division I record last year. Now, I don't think Gibbler, number one, I don't know if he can stay on this pace. Number two, I don't know if he's going to throw the number of qualifying innings
right.
to get him in that conversation. But, again, that's what I think of. I see a left-hander. I see a lot of swing and miss, and I think of what Hagen did last year.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, he's not going to have the innings to qualify, but still what he's doing is really good. And I think the more outings he gets, I think the more confidence he's going to build up. And I think that's a big part of it is going out and just trusting your stuff. There's been a couple times, you know, his last outing, you know, against A&M, you know, had a hard time controlling his breaking ball, had to go exclusively fastballs, couldn't throw a slider over the plate, and he gets hit. You know, that'll with experience – that goes away, and you get out there, and I think he's starting to realize how good he is, and he's going out there with a little swagger.
You can see the confidence. Dave Van Horn was asked last night about Cole Gibbler and what has made him so hard to hit this year, and this is what he had to say.
Okay, yeah, it's hard to pick up the spin on his breaking ball. Coming out of the hand, it looks like a fastball to the hitters, and it's just really tight. I'd say it probably tunnels the same. If you know what that means, it just means it looks like it's going to be a fastball, and it drops. Now, you know, they see it a little bit. They get used to it, and they figure it out. But, you know, his role has been an inning here or two at the most, and he's been getting a lot of Ks, you know, in his inning or two. So it's hard to really pick up his off-speed stuff. And he's got a good fastball.
Arkansas last night, Brent Iredell had a real good game. Defensively, you know, he kind of helped set the tone early with a couple of nice plays on ground balls over there at third. But then offensively, he hasn't had that monster game yet since the slump.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's having these little he's taking these steps to where you can see that big game is probably coming at some point in time. You know, it's – yes, or on Tuesday it was 1-for-1 and hit by a pitch. And then yesterday it was 1-for-2, just barely missed the pitch that he – popped up on. But then he walks two times, and it's the first time that he's had multiple walks in a game, I think, since the Vanderbilt series. And so it feels like you're just seeing him kind of really start to emerge and be that hitter again that he was early in the season.
Yeah, and the thing about Brent is he never has that, like, a non-competitive at-bat. Like, every time he goes up to the plate, he tends to put together a good at-bat. A lot of guys, when they struggle, they walk away from the plate, and you're like, wow, he just didn't have a chance that at-bat. With him, you don't feel that way. He always puts together a competitive at-bat, battles up there, works the count, got a real good eye at the plate, doesn't chase a lot of pitches out of the zone. I think sometimes, honestly, Matt, and I don't say this very often, I think he's almost too selective. Huh. And I think there's some fastball counts where he's late on fastballs where I wish he would just sell out and get the barrel out there and, you know, hammer the ball. But, you know, I think I do think he's trending in the right direction, and that's good to see. I think he's going to go down to Florida and have a big weekend.
It's a hitter-friendly ballpark.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I have a feeling that there are going to be a lot of numbers put up in that series this weekend. Do you see anything different from his approach than what you were seeing whenever he was slumping?
No, I don't see really that much. He's doing a little thing. He's doing a little what I call a negative stride. Like, his front foot is, when he goes to stride, his front foot comes backwards just a little bit, and that causes the backside to drop, and it causes you to get under the ball, causes you to be a little steep into the zone. Kind of causes a little uphill. I call it an under over swing, and, you know, but other than that, same thing. And I think that's part of the reason he's missing some of those fastballs. Just barely underneath them, just a little bit tardy on them. But, you know, hitters go through stuff like that throughout the season, and it's just it's a constant game of adjustments to work through stuff like that.
Brent said something last night whenever he was asked about what he's the steps that he's taken to, you know, get out of this. He said that he was talking to somebody who explained to him, quote, just take BP at like a 60% capacity. What does that mean?
Well, you ever go to a major league batting practice, like pregame before the game?
I have not, actually.
You ought to. A lot of guys, their first
not
round.
A lot of MLB games around here.
Well, good point. A lot of guys, like, their first round is just kind of a get-loose round. It's mm-hmm. just their coach is throwing BP, and you're really honestly taking about a, not quite 60%, but more of 70, 80% swing, just getting your body loose, getting everything to working. I call it getting your body connected. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of guys do that early on. When I would get in the cage, my first round, I really like to do that, just relax my body and just try to feel everything get connected. Then, you know, the next round you go in, and then, you know, everything's connected, and you start cutting it loose a little bit.
So Dave Van Horn was asked last night after the game about Iredell and what he's been doing well, and this is what he had to say.
I'm trying to pull the ball a little bit more, but he did let a curveball get deep yesterday and hammered into that net. Today, you know, he hit the first pitch right through the shift hard. You know, I guess just the swing just seems better. It seems a little more powerful. It's not as uphill. And I don't know. You know, sometimes you just go through a little bit of a period or things don't work out for you, and you start pressing, you try to change things in the middle of at-bats. And even his last at-bat when he popped up, I thought he took a really good swing, just missed it. So as long as the timing's good, you know, you're not going to square it up every time. But I just see kind of getting back to where he was a month ago.
I want to say something about Vahevo Loy here too in these two games against Little Rock. I don't remember what his stats were on Tuesday, but, you know, every game that he plays, he has at least a decent game,
yeah,
if not a really good game. And like yesterday, he singled and scored, and then he hit a home run. But, you know, the thing that jumped out to me both days during this series, Bubba, was, like, him putting his body on the line on balls that are hit towards short, diving after it in the outfield. I mean, it's like, and this is Wednesday, and you're up whatever and whatever yeah. inning, and, you know, he's still out there, and he's just going 90 to nothing, giving it his all. I have kind of come to the, you know, I mean, it's, I was talking to my son about this yesterday because he said, Vahiva's not going to be here next year. I said, no, you're not going to be here next year. And, you know, it's one of those things where you get a little, I don't know, maybe reflectional, but you only got about 6, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, however many weeks left to watch this guy. And I just find myself watching him and just like, wow, I really enjoy watching him play baseball.
Yeah. And for me, it goes back to you've got in the game of baseball right now, Matt, there's so many analytics and I get frustrated when I hear a scout say, oh, he can't make, you know, he's not going to play shortstop at the next level and all this. There's something that the stat sheet, all the analytics doesn't analyze how much a guy loves playing baseball. And I think Vejiva loves playing baseball. Heston Kerstad was the same way. He came out to a couple of my practices and was just like one of the guys. He wanted to get in there and hit and do everything. I mean, he just loved playing baseball. And I see Vejiva the same way. You know what was awesome last night? After the game, you'd probably gone in the press conference. Kids are running the bases. Vejiva goes out there, and he's going around the bases with the kids. Well, I mean, how many what I consider superstar players do that? I mean, I thought it was awesome. It's real telling about him. I think he just loves playing the game of baseball, and he knows one way to play it, and that's hard. It doesn't matter if it's a Wednesday night, or Tuesday night in a 10-0 game, or Wednesday night, or in the College World Series. There's one way to play the game, and that's how he plays it. Now, he did dive for a ball last night, and he was a little bit slow getting up, and I'm like, oh, no, not again. But he ended up being okay.
He's always one of the first ones off the field after the game, because I don't know if you've noticed this, like all the kids in the ballpark gravitate toward him and Cahillo and they want their autographs. They want their pictures taken with him. And those guys, they stand there and they do it until there is nobody left. Have you noticed this?
Oh, always. I want to say Tuesday night, he was the last one signing autographs, and he signed every single autograph. And even after the doubleheader against A&M, they're out there signing autographs for a long time after the game, which is, I mean, that's refreshing to see because, you know, one of these days no one's going to want their autograph. So enjoy it. Enjoy it while it lasts. And but, no, I just think it's really cool. And they're I don't know. I just I think when it comes to – well, both of the brothers I love. But, Vejiva, I just love watching him play the game, kind of like you. It's something that you take it for granted sometimes. You're going to miss it next year when he's gone.
The Aloys right now, Vejiva batting .379, Cahillo batting .378. Pretty amazing what they're doing. And Vejiva last night, his 16th home run of the season. It gave him 30 during his Arkansas career and 44 as a college player. If he hits one more home run, Bubba, it'll be the most that Arkansas's had in a single season. I expect him to hit way more than one, especially with the weather warming up. He may hit multiple home runs down at Florida the way that ballpark plays. But one more home run, it'll be the most homers that a Razorback has had since Kerstad in 2019. And wouldn't surprise me if we talk about top 10 lists. Wouldn't surprise me if we see Vejiva on some of these top 10, whether it be career homers at Arkansas, which would really be something because he only, you know, will have been here for 2 years, or single season home runs. It just feels like this is going to be one of those, you know, and we'll see how high the number can get, but like one of those maybe mid-20s approaching 30 home run type seasons for him.
Could be. And I think one thing that helps him is, I mean, you look at the lineup, you look at some of the guys coming up behind him, you know, you can't really, I mean, yeah, you don't want him to be the one to beat you, but if you fool around, Maxwell's going to beat you, or Cahillo, or, you know, Iredell, Kozel, there's someone else is going to beat you in the lineup. So I think it helps that there's a powerful lineup. They can't really pitch around him. I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm just saying, you know, he's really good. What I like about it, you think about the home run he hit last night. So I tell kids all the time, look, anyone can spin on a ball and hit a ball power, you know, pull side. True power is what he did last night. He took a 74-mile-an-hour hanging curveball and hit it 105 to right field. That is true power. And it didn't just scrape the back of the fence. That thing hit halfway up the net. I mean, that is true power. And, you know, as a scout, you got to get super excited about that.
I was writing something down, so I didn't see the pitch. I hear, like, I kind of look up and I hear the crack and I see the ball going. So it wasn't until I got home last night that I pulled the replay up of that home run. I mean, it was that thing had some high arc on that pitch. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see Vahiva's eyes when it gets about a third of a way to the plate. His eyes get real big. It's like he knows what he's about to do. And I wish I could have seen the eyes of the pitcher. Like, oh, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah, as soon as he let go of that pitch, I think he knew it wasn't going to be good. But the good thing is a lot of guys will pop that pitch up, or a lot of guys will get antsy. They'll see it, and it looks so good that they get out there and they dribble it and they roll over to short. Mm-hmm. He stayed back, kept it. I mean, just stayed loaded and waited, and then wham, hammered that ball to right center. It's good to see.
So do you think Gabe Frazier has taken the second base job?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he has too. I wonder how much him not playing against A&M last week was a result of the leg tightness, whatever you want to call it, that he had going on. Because I just feel like everything with this team seems to flow really well with Kozel playing first base. Yeah. And it feels like the times that they've gotten out of whack in the last couple of weeks has been, not every time, but some of the times is when they put Kozel at second and then they've tried to – it feels like the lineup and just the continuity of everything works best whenever you have Frazier at second in place of Souza.
Look, I like him a lot, and you watch him play, and he plays with a lot of energy and passion. He's good. You know, Matt, I think of Frazier like that wild stallion that you see, you know, out there in the Wild West, and you get him in the corral, and you're like, man, if we could just ever, you know, break this thing and tame him a little bit, he's going to be awesome. And I kind of see that in Frazier. You see a little bit of – like, you know, I'm starting to see him field the ground balls more like a Dave Van Horn. You and I have talked about it in here before. Early on, he didn't do thing like a Dave Van Horn infielder did it. He got it done, but he did it different. Mm-hmm. I think once he kind of understands the DVH program, the way of going about things, I think he's going to be really good. So a long-winded answer is, yeah, I think he's won that second base job. I think he's an exciting player. He's got speed. He's got power. He can bunt, except with the bases loaded.
We're going to get there.
Okay, good.
Save that.
But I like him a lot, and I'm all in on him.
So I asked Van Horn after the game last night about how he's grown as a defender at second base, because, you know, he had that shoulder injury in the preseason. He couldn't throw the ball for quite some time, and this is what Van Horn had to say.
Well, he slowed down a lot mentally, you know, out there. You saw that come and get a play. You know, that was a play that he used to try to just throw under his arm instead. He clears, and, you know, he's been listening to me, I guess, because I work with him defensively, and just take care of the ball. Don't try to do anything crazy. You know, you're really talented, but, you know, if you don't have a play, don't try to make the play. And I think the more he plays, the more confident he's going to get. I mean, that was a really good play on that backhand. Then he slips on that wet ryegrass out there, and he didn't panic. You know, gathered himself, flipped it over there. That was showed a little arm strength there. So, you know, he's played mostly shortstop his whole life, and move over to second, it's different. You got guys sliding and coming at you on the double play. You got to have some footwork there, and he's learned how to do that and worked hard at that. And he's got good range. He can steal a base. And, I thought he had a really good 2 days here.
Okay, so you talk about breaking some of the wildness out of him. It's this bunt. Base is loaded. 1-0 count. And it's a 2-0 game. I mean, this is a big, big point in the game. And I guess on his own, he decides to lay down a bunt.
Yeah.
Okay. He goes right to the pitcher. And the other thing, Bubba, is who was on third? Logan Maxwell.
Yeah.
That's not who you're bunting for when they're at third base. With the way his leg is.
And honestly, I think it caught Logan off.
He was out by 10 feet at home plate.
It wouldn't even close. I mean, if you're third base with two outs right there, 1-0 count, last thing you're thinking of is, oh, this guy's going to lay down a bunt. I mean, first of all, it wasn't a very good bunt. It was back at the pitcher. You know, the golden rule there is if you're bunting for a hit, if you make a mistake, make it foul. Mm-hmm. Don't make it back at the pitcher. But you don't bunt there. 1-0, hit up on the gap. How about a bases clearing double or maybe bang it off the scoreboard. But I think that's part of the learning experience. Mm-hmm. You know, he probably did that in high school and got away with it. You know, probably saw a third baseman playing deep, big chubby pitcher on the mound, I don't know, something, and laid down a bunt and got away with it. But, yeah, you don't do that at this level. And it was funny. As soon as he did it, I'm trained to look to the dugout.
Yeah, no, I
look at DVH, and you know his reaction said it all. And so, but you know what? The good thing is this is about learning and getting better. I promise you, the rest of his career here at Arkansas, and if hopefully he's blessed to go on and play beyond that, he will never bunt with the bases loaded again and a 1-0 count, two outs.
Everybody in the dugout was like, "What? What just happened right there?" We bring all this up. Just to play this clip, this is what Van Horn had to say. And this is Tom Murphy asking the question last night. I thought this was kind of a humorous exchange.
We didn't call it. And that's called trying to do too much. And, you know, you got a 1-0 count. You got some power. Might hit a double or a homer right there. If you are going to bunt right there, don't let the pitcher field it. But, no, that was a mistake, obviously.
So, that's what these Tuesday and Wednesday games are for, is to learn. And I like Gabe Frazier. I think he's going to be really good. But like you said, you know, you kind of have to watch that Colt run awkwardly before it looks, you know, beautiful out in the field. When we come back, we're going to talk about Florida, talk about Arkansas getting some pitching healthy, and a lot more. But another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Hope you'll subscribe to our podcast if you're a first-time listener, or if you just haven't done it yet. You can find it on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports, or you can subscribe to our YouTube video page by searching Whole Hog Sports there. Arkansas is at Florida this weekend. The Gators are 28-15 overall. They're 6-12 in conference play, but don't let the record fool you. They're playing better baseball, I think, than their record would suggest. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. They had a 7-game win streak snapped the other day against Mississippi State, and Bubba, before then, they had won 5 in a row in SEC play.
Well, I feel like we're getting them kind of like the A&M series. You know, you can't even look at the record. You know, A&M came to town. You and I even talked about it. Throw the record out. That means nothing. We're playing a team that's really talented, that's playing really good baseball. And that's kind of the way I feel about Florida. I feel like it's, you know, it's one of those things where throw the record out, because if you look at just the talent on the team, they got some good arms. They got some really talented position players. Throw the record out and let's go play ball, because they're playing really good baseball right now. It should be a great series.
Weather looks good for the series, so I wouldn't expect there to be any, you know, real big delays. I guess this is the time of year. I feel like every time of year is the time of year in Florida where you get the pop-up showers in the afternoon. So maybe that plays a factor. I don't know. But, yeah, you look at it, Friday, high of 91, Saturday, high of 90, Sunday, high of 91. The rain chances are fairly low all three of those days. Be the hottest series that Arkansas has played all year. Florida, they won the other night. They won a midweek game. I've got it pulled up here. Who they beat? It was, do you know?
Georgia Southern.
Georgia Southern. Very good. 12-1 in 7 innings. Kevin O'Sullivan spoke after the game, Florida's longtime head coach. And this is what he had to say about playing Arkansas this week.
Same one has been for like the last month, honestly. It's one pitch at a time, one game at a time. And I mean, I'm sure they know you know, Arkansas is a complete team. I mean, they pitch, they throw strikes, they play defense. I think they're fielding like 984. Offensively, they've hit 88 home runs this year. So, typical Arkansas team. They're very talented, and obviously we'll have to play our best. Simple as that.
Do you feel like you guys have progressed to the point that you can win a series like that here at home especially?
Yeah, we're at home. I mean, expectations haven't changed. You know, we put ourselves in a difficult situation, but it's certainly doable. So, certainly would rather be playing it at home rather than on the road, for sure. And obviously we got two weekends after Arkansas, both on the road, and then return home for the last series. So obviously this is an important series for us, for sure.
How many push-ups do you think he can do?
More than me and you combined, probably.
Probably so. No, it's so weird how, like, I mean, he's gotten in such great shape. He just looks so different than he did early on in his career. And then we're talking, like, you can't see his eyes, the way he pulls the hat down. He's always got the sunglasses. There's a mysteriousness, I feel like, to Kevin O'Sullivan.
Yeah. I like him, though. I feel like when you ask him a question, you're going to get – I mean, you're not going to get a lot of, cliches. I mean, he's going to – if he's thinking something, I feel like he's going to tell you. He's a lot like DVH.
I feel bad because I – and this is my own fault. I don't think of him whenever I think of, like, the great SEC baseball coaches. Part of it is that he's not had the longevity, although he has been there for 17 years. He doesn't have the longevity of a Bianco who's been at Ole Miss for 25, or Van Horn and Corbin. They've been at their schools for 23. I would even think of, you know, Maneri, because he was at LSU for so long before he got back into the conference. O'Sullivan, the age he is and the rate at which he wins at Florida, I think maybe – we'll see. It wouldn't surprise me if he decides he wants to coach long enough that he could – be up there. I don't know that anybody's going to ever challenge what Ron Polk did at Mississippi State and Georgia, but maybe he's second. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
So when I rate coaches in the SEC, especially in the SEC, I look at how they run their teams. You know, even like Paul Maneri, I love the way – even I'm not an LSU fan, but when he was at LSU, I like the way they play the game. They play the game hard. Mm-hmm. South Carolina, they play the game hard. He just doesn't have that much talent. DVH, love it. Our style of baseball, I love it. The way they respect the game. They play the game hard. They respect their opponent. They don't do all that stupid stuff. I feel like Sullivan's a lot like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the way he runs his team. And the way they play the game, they don't always win, but they play the game hard, and they play the game right. It's a team to where, you know, if you had a baseball team, you'd feel good about saying, hey, boys, let's go to the ballpark tonight and let's watch this team play baseball, because that's how baseball is supposed to be played. And that's how I judge this. And unfortunately, in the SEC, there's a lot of crap that goes on that I don't want my kids modeling their game after. And it's kind of split down the middle. Actually, it's not even down the middle anymore. Mm. But you understand what I'm saying, right? It's a solid baseball, and I think ultimately that type of baseball wins at the end of the day.
O'Sullivan and Van Horn are tied right now among active coaches with 9 College World Series appearances apiece. O'Sullivan, of course, has a national championship, has a couple of national runner-up finishes, and they came awfully close last year with a team that made the tournament literally by one game. If they had one more loss, they can't make the tournament. And I think last year shows you, and maybe as a good segue into talking about this year's team, is that you can't really judge a team necessarily by its SEC record, because all the other teams that they're playing are really good, and you can get in a funk for 2 or 3, 4 weeks maybe. And it can make you look a whole lot worse than you really are.
Well, okay, so go back to 22 and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Last team in the tournament, probably, wouldn't you say?
Probably. I mean, they never say who's exactly the last, but they said they were one of the last 4.
Yeah, I mean, going to win the whole thing. I mean, it's about when you get hot. I mean, the talent's there. Almost, you know, with the exclusion of a couple of teams that I'm not going to say, the talent's there in the SEC. You could take a team that's, you know, there's 16 teams now, which still I hate looking at and not seeing a division. But there's 16 teams. Let's just pick the 9th team. Don't even know who they are right now. If you're the 9th team in the SEC, that team could win a national championship. You could probably go lower than that.
Yeah.
You could probably go as low as 10.
Yeah.
And that team could win a national championship. That's how good the talent is in the SEC. It's about when you get hot. And I feel like, you know, Razorback kind of got a tough draw because had we played A&M 3 weeks ago, we sweep them. Had we played Florida 3 to 4 weeks ago, we sweep them. We're getting them when they're getting hot. And, you know, it's nothing you can do about it. You can play the game. I think it's going to make us better. But, yeah, it's just a lot of it's timing.
So you look at Florida, and to me, it looks like a team that can hit and doesn't really pitch that great. I mean, even like last week at Mississippi State, it was a lot of high-scoring games that, you know, they were winning to take those. You look offensively, I think it starts with Colby Shelton. We know all about him. Mm-hmm. Really good third baseman, shortstop, 376 hitter for Florida. He's going to be a high-round draft pick later this year. Brody Donay looks like he's gotten over what Peyton Holt did to him last year with the okey-doke. 341 hitter for Florida. He's doing pretty well. They've got five over 315 this year hitters. One of the big things that hurt Florida is that Cade Kierland, who is their second baseman, he suffered a shoulder injury early in the year, and he's out for the season. This was the preseason All-SEC coaches pick for the best second baseman in the conference. It reminds me a lot, and you and I have talked about how there's some similarities between Florida and Texas A&M. You know, A&M, they lose Grijalvec, they're yeah. great third baseman. Florida, they lose their second baseman, Kierland. And so that, you know, I mean, even like what we've seen with Nolan Souza in Arkansas, you lose a piece like that, and these are pieces that are even better than Souza was for the Razorbacks. It can throw your team off for a little while.
Yeah, and A&M's coming around now. It took them a while to get the chemistry back. Same with Florida. It took them a while. They're getting the chemistry back. And I think we're in the middle of that right now. I think we're just coming out of it where, you know, it's kind of life after Nolan Souza. And it's not just the offensive stats. Everyone gets caught up in the offensive stats. It's all the other things that guys like that, your really good players, bring to the lineup. And you know, I think we're experiencing that right now firsthand. And I think we're coming out of it. And I think Gabe Frazier is a big part of that. But just the depth that we have. I think we have more depth than a lot of teams out there, and I think we're able to cope with that. You said before that's the one position where we could afford it. I disagree. I think outfield is a position where we could afford to lose a guy.
Because of depth.
Yeah, more so than second base, just because Sousa's so big. So such a big part of the lineup. But love you, but I disagreed with you.
No, that's
there.
Fine.
But look, if you look at their team, Matt, I go SEC only. You know, when you look at their pitching, they're 15th in ERA. They're 8.21, giving up a lot of hits, 148 innings, 175 hits. Opponent batting average is .298. They're giving up a lot of runs, 136 runs. You know, but they're getting better. They're trending in the right direction. If you go off of their hitting, sixth in the league in hitting, but I think they're better than a sixth place team in the league when you look at their lineup as a whole. So, you know, I think we go down there and play Razorback baseball. I think we can win the series.
We don't have their updated availability reports, and unfortunately, the way the SEC site works is that they don't archive the availability reports from earlier weeks. I do remember looking at theirs a couple of weeks back, though, and noticing that they had a lot of pitchers on there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're dealing with a lot of injuries in their bullpen. And that's one of the differences between Florida and A&M is that A&M, their pitching staff just isn't very good. At least the numbers are not very good. And they've got pretty much everybody healthy. They lost Sadeo in the fall, but that was not somebody that in the last 6 months they were counting on. Florida, I think they've lost a lot of the pieces that they thought would be, or at least they've been dealing with, and you know how this goes, you can get them back, doesn't mean they're the same pitcher. Right. I think they're dealing with some of that.
Yeah, I think so. And that's why you see them so low. The only team below them, obviously, is Missouri, and then you got South Carolina right in front of them at 14th in the league in pitching stats. But there's so much talent. And like I said, I hate to keep going and saying it over and over, but you can throw that record out. When we roll into town, I mean, we might as well be 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be a great series. I feel good about it, though. I like where we are. I like the direction we're going in as a team. And then, you know, getting a few guys back healthy is going to help us as well.
That ballpark is the way the wind blows out there. It's very conducive to, you know, a lot of power. And I don't know, there have been some teams from Arkansas that have gone down there in the past that I don't know that I felt great about them being able to slug with Florida. I feel like this team can, if that's the way that they've got to play these games. We'll see. This is what Dave Van Horn had to say last night about playing the Gators.
Yeah, it's going to be a major challenge. I mean, it's one of the games before the season started. We were like, wow, this stretch is going to be amazing. And it starts, you know, going to Georgia week five and then coming home playing A&M. Now, you know, you think A&M's struggled a little bit, and they have, but they've been playing really well the last 3 weeks. And then, and now you look at Florida, they'd won 7 or 8 in a row until they lost on Sunday to Mississippi State. They had already won the series. They run-ruled somebody last night. And, you know, so we're getting exactly what we thought we were going to get before the season started, a really talented team with good arms and a lot of offense. And, yeah, it's, you know, we know what we're going into and see if we can handle it.
You know, what's interesting about this stretch, Bubba, is that every team that Arkansas is playing over the last 6 weeks of the SEC play is either in the top 10 or has been in the top 10 this season, which, you know, maybe Florida was overrated at the beginning of the year, maybe A&M was, but it speaks, I think being in that position in the first place speaks to the talent level that they have. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And if you look at our schedule, I mean, is there a tougher schedule in the nation than what we have right now? I mean,
if there is, it's another SEC team.
Yeah. I mean, our schedule, it's ridiculous. It's just, you know, we had a couple of easier ones. Nothing's easy in the SEC, but early on, which I think was good. But boy, the back end of this thing is just every weekend. It's like, wow.
But it gets you
starting
ready.
Basically with Georgia.
It gets you ready.
It does. It makes you better.
And that's why I think the SEC always does so well in the postseason is because the teams have seen this. It's same thing in basketball this year. You get two teams from the SEC that make the Final Four. Mm-hmm. It's because they saw really competitive quality competition on almost a night-by-night basis.
Yeah.
And there's really no substitute for that, I feel like.
No, there's not. I mean, you know, I think you get this – Dave talks all the time about it's 30 games. It's you want to get the wins when you can. And I think that's what we did, a really good job of getting the wins early on, because late in the year you might drop a game here or there. You know, look what happened in Georgia. Look what happened last weekend against A&M. Dropped a couple games that we probably could have won. So you got to win those games when you can. And I think this is a winnable series when we go down to Florida.
This is what Dave Van Horn had to say about this stretch run that Arkansas is in the midst of.
That's the only way that's the way you should handle it. You know, first off, feel like you're playing Division I college baseball in the Southeastern Conference. That's the way I look at it. And these are the kind of teams that you got to find a way to beat if you want to get to the College World Series. So you play these guys down the stretch. And I made the comment tonight when I think I was on TV, but you know, the whole just playing in the league gets you ready for the end of the season. But what we're trying to do is get everybody healthy. And I told them, yeah, you got to embrace it. When the computer spit out the schedule. And that's who we get to play the last 6 series. We were going, whoa, baby, you know, that's a pretty good run there. You never know how it's going to go. You know, the other teams might be really good as well. But, you know, I just told our team, you know, that, you know, you just need to feel like it was a blessing that we get to play these people and win as many as you can. And we're not going to get all uptight about it. And just keep plugging away and try to be right at the end of the year.
This week in the SEC, OU is at Georgia, Missouri is at Alabama. Both of those series begin on Thursday. Then, Bubba, there's some good ones this weekend. We'll start with some that aren't so good. You got South Carolina at Kentucky. Maybe competitive, maybe interesting, but just kind of lacks some of the appeal of the others. Mississippi State goes to Auburn. But listen to the rest of the lineup here. You got Vanderbilt at Ole Miss, Tennessee at LSU. And Tennessee at LSU would be the series of the week, I think, any other week of the year. But this week you've got A&M at Texas.
That's the one I'm looking forward to.
I think everybody's looking forward to it.
You know, the way that whole deal went down, and I don't want to rehash it. But if I'm a player on that A&M team, and I thought it was awesome that, you know, when the coach left, that team stayed together. Mm-hmm. You didn't see a lot of guys jump in the portal. That says a lot about their feelings.
Well, they all got in the portal, then they got back out whenever their guy was hired as the head coach.
Well, okay.
But your point's well taken.
Yeah. I think they're going to go down there on a mission, and I hope they absolutely spank the Longhorns. I'm going to love it. Now, the other series that's going to be a good one is Tennessee and LSU. And look, I've watched Tennessee play, and they're very talented, but they do not play fundamental baseball. They kick the ball around. They don't hold runners on. They don't do a lot of the little things that it takes to be playing at the end of the year.
LSU's a good weekend team. I've not been real, and I think maybe this speaks to a lack of pitching depth. I've not been real impressed with what I've seen from them some in the midweeks. Like, did you see what happened to them the other night? Northwestern mm-hmm. State went down there and run-rolled them in Baton Rouge. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Yeah, A&M Texas, that is appointment television. You know, Van Horn talked this week about, I guess, just a little bit of the frustration of how the schedule broke for them last week. And he said some of it was self-inflicted because Arkansas – wanted to play on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, after or on Easter weekend. They don't want to play on Sunday. Yeah. You and I have both been to Easter Sunday games. Nobody goes to those games. Vanderbilt was here in 2014, the year they won the national championship. I think both those teams were like top 10, top 15 that weekend. Sunday rubber game on Easter, there's like 2,000 people in the ballpark. It's just people don't show up for that game, and so that's why – it's one of the reasons why I think that they go to these Thursday, Friday, Saturday on Easter. But they didn't know at that time when they set that A&M was going to have one of its series bumped up to a Thursday start against South Carolina for TV purposes. And so then you go into that series last weekend, and you get the rain that plays a factor in this. Arkansas plays an extra inning game on getaway day at Georgia, so you've got extra pitching that's needed, and then travel. Anyway, Arkansas's pitching was exhausted relative to A&M's last week. I think Arkansas might be catching Florida at a good time. Florida played on Easter last week. Arkansas didn't have to play Saturday or Sunday of last weekend, and so it feels like maybe the roles reverse a little bit this week, and Arkansas's got the rested pitching.
I hope you're right. You know, I watched this Tuesday night. We looked like a team full of energy. I think the guys were just foaming at the mouth to get back on the field on Tuesday against ULR. You know, so we'll see. I think, you know, I don't know how much difference. I do think it played a role in the A&M series. There's a big difference in the rest that they had versus us. And then you've got the doubleheader on Friday. Boy, you know, when I woke up Saturday and I looked outside and it's not raining, I'm like, boy, I bet Dave's not happy. But that's the weather in Northwest Arkansas. You can't control it. And you have to make those decisions. And, you know, we made it, and it is what it is. But, I mean, that's just kind of bad luck right there.
The difference in Arkansas A&M and Arkansas Florida is that Arkansas had pitchers throwing on short rest. Mm-hmm. This weekend they're going to have pitchers throwing on long rest. Florida's still going to have their pitchers throwing on normal rest. So it's not a perfect apples-to-apples comparison, but it is something that's just kind of interesting to talk about beforehand. We'll finish with this. Arkansas, they get Gage Wood back last week. We don't have the starting rotation yet, but ask Van Horn last night. He said it's probably going to stay the same as last week, which would mean Root and then Gage Wood. He said Wood would be on about a 40-pitch count this week. And then Bidel sees in game three, Hunter Dietz was available in the midweek. We didn't see him, and I suspect it's for this reason. Number one, Tuesday, 7-inning game. You lose a couple of innings where you can throw a pitcher out there. That probably would have been the time that you wanted to throw him out there in a 10-0, 9-0 type game. Real low-pressure type deal. I don't think that there was really an ideal time to bring somebody back for the first time in a year in a game setting, in a 2-0, 3-0 game like they played last night.
Yeah, I think you're right. I thought we would see him last night. I was hoping we'd score. Usually on a Wednesday game, I can't remember what, Phil Phil told me the scores, but usually on a Wednesday game, there's a whole lot of runs scored. Mm-hmm. Wasn't many scored last night. I agree. It probably wasn't a good time to run Deets out there. Maybe we'll have a week, a game in Florida where we score a bunch of runs early, get a big lead, and we can put him out there. I think you just want to bring him back slow. A big part of it is when you've been out that long is building your confidence. And, boy, the last thing you want to do is come in a tight situation, a high-leverage situation. I think it's better if you get a situation where you go out there and just relax and throw your pitches. And so, you know, hopefully that situation will come up, because I know Deets would be a big part of that bullpen.
The expectations are going to get Parker Coyle back again in the next maybe 2 to 3 weeks. We'll see exactly how long it takes. This is wishful thinking. But if you're Arkansas and you can get Gage Wood pitching at his potential and Hunter Deets pitching near his potential and Parker Coyle back to what you saw earlier this year in the postseason, I mean, holy cow. The bullpen's not pitching bad right now.
Right. And – you know, we talk about Dave's circle of trust. It tends to get smaller, you know, as you get late in the year. But right now, it's actually expanding. Mm. I think there's more guys that are stepping up right now and getting, and Dave's got confidence in them to go in crucial situations. And I think it's only going to expand, which is going to be huge going into the latter part of the season. And I was excited about Gage. I don't care if he went a third of an inning. I thought his stuff was tremendous. I really did. Fastball was up to 98. Spin rate on his breaking ball off the chart, higher than I've ever seen it. Now, were they strikes? No. But the thing is, I mean, his stuff was ridiculous. Now we got to do is get that stuff into the zone, and I think it's just going to take an outing or two to get his timing back, get his release point right, and get all that honed together. But it's once it happens, that's a huge lift to the pitching rotation.
Are you in Van Horn's circle of trust? I saw you down there chatting with him for about 20 minutes before the game the other night.
Yeah, you know what? I love talking to DVH. There's times to talk to him, and there's a time not to. You got to kind of know, you know, when. And when he's in one of the talkative moves, I absolutely love talking to him. People don't realize how good a personality he's got. He's fun to talk to. And sometimes we're talking about nothing to do with baseball. We're just talking about other stuff. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I hope I'm in his circle of trust.
I think you are. I don't think he'd give you 20 minutes before a game like that. Yeah. You missed your first segment of the radio.
Yeah, I was late. Phil was blowing up my phone, and so I ran up to the booth, but I kind of weighed it. You know, okay, Phil, don't. I hope Phil doesn't watch this, but I really enjoy talking to, you know, the radio part's fun, Matt, and I enjoy it. But you know what I really like? I love being down on the field. Mm-hmm. I miss that part. I don't miss the competition. I don't miss playing. I miss all the stuff before the game. I miss the camaraderie of the team. I love being around the players, talking to them, kind of getting the feel of their mood before the game. I love talking to the coaches, Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, all the guys, Dave. It's really, you know, and you got to, you know, be thoughtful of their time, because mm-hmm. they got a game to play. But they're awesome. All of them are awesome. As far as if I've got a question, they answer it. And man, it's just a lot of fun.
That's a great thing. It seems like every sport's like that: football, basketball, baseball. The coaches, it's like that 30 minutes, an hour before the game. It's kind of like their time almost to unwind, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah.
But they put in all this preparation, and it's just like kind of their time to take a deep breath before everything gets going.
Yeah, I've got a spot leading up to a game where I'll talk to people, but once the game starts or I'm right close to the game starting,
you're locked in.
Yeah, I don't want to be bothered. But up until then, you know, I'll talk, but some people just don't have a sense of awareness. They just don't get it. But I try to, you know, you can kind of read a guy's body language and tell, you know, if he's in the middle of something, if they're watching the hitters take BP and they're taking notes, you know, mm-hmm. not to bug them. But, yeah, they're all awesome, every one of them, and they're a lot of fun to talk to.
Arkansas and Florida this weekend. Razorbacks, we'll see what they can do. Can they snap this little bit of an SEC losing streak? They have 5:30 Central is the first time on Friday, 2:00 on Saturday, noon on Sunday. The middle game is going to be on SEC Network. The other two games are going to be on SEC Network Plus. Bubba will be back in studio with us on Monday, and we'll break down what we see in Gainesville. We'll have another podcast tomorrow Hope that we see you there. Hope that we see you at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everybody.